It's the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. Welcome to the third hour of the programme this morning. We have on Zoom our historian, Dr. Joe Kelly, and also Kelly Beelan, who's a research manager with the Irish Family History Centre. Just before the break, Kelly was briefing us on President Joe Biden's ancestral links to Donegal. We've discovered his great-great-great-grandfather was working with the Coast Guard in Donegal and was very involved in the establishment of Coast Guard, indeed, in Ireland. Kelly, I take it the research is going to continue and we're going to be hearing more about these links in the coming weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have, we've been working on the president's ancestry actively since 2016, and there's always new information becoming available. As you said, Joe, it's amazing how many records we have a hold of. And, you know, every day there's new records being made available to us online. So with that, we're constantly developing the president's Irish ancestry. We do have a few things up our sleeve, like I said, that we're going to present to the president privately, but we do have a lot that we want to share with everyone, you know, now that he's here. So there are more connections, not only the Donegal connections, we have more Mayo connections, we have a new Galway connection. The president is really, as you said earlier, Joe, one of the most Irish presidents that we have, one of the most Irish American presidents. So we have a lot more to share beyond what's already out there publicly.
Kelly, thank you very much indeed for sharing all that with us this morning. It's absolutely fascinating to hear that. And I know Brendan Boyle, the congressman, was trying to get Joe Biden to come to Donegal. And a lot of people now are saying, oh, if only we'd known all this 6 months ago, perhaps he might have been a bit more successful. But
fingers crossed for the next one.
Absolutely. Who knows what's going to happen for the next one. Kelly, thank you very much indeed. We're going to let you get back to your research and all the best with it. You've been doing phenomenal work so far. And congratulations to you and your colleagues. Going back to you, Joe Kelly, in terms of the political impact of this visit, obviously we can't ignore the inactivity at Stormont. We can't ignore the whole executive and assembly debate that's going on at the moment. How much of an impact do you, Joe Kelly, believe that Joe Biden's visit is going to have?
Look, we're in a political vacuum. We know that nationally and internationally. It really, I think Biden's going to try to give it a little nudge, and he has to be very careful and tempered with how he proceeds with that, because the unionists have more or less said that the Windsor framework isn't suitable for them or isn't what they require, and yet it gives the six counties, Northern Ireland, the best side of the EU and also of Brexit. It's an amazing deal in that sense that economically they can benefit both ways. And so how he achieves that, I'm not sure. But the fact that Richie Sunak was there meeting him, and it was to Belfast that he went first, is quite significant, I think. And maybe what they're trying to do from a starting point is to try to undo the block that Boris Johnson had put there. There is no doubt that Boris Johnson damaged the Good Friday process quite a considerable amount. And we have a different person in Richie Sunak, thank God. And hopefully the push that is required, I'm sure Biden will be not just giving them moral support and political support, but will be saying to them, look, from an investment point of view, from the international, you know, funds that are available, that this is a good deal for the peace in Ireland and in the six counties. And one mustn't forget, like Bill Clinton, as far as I know, is here as well. What Bill Clinton has done as president, he came here twice to Ireland, and how he, in the last, you know, the minutes before the Good Friday Agreement, encouraging them to sign up to this, that this has been very much influenced by American presidents. The fact that he had sent George Mitchell back in 1998, the fact that John Kennedy III now, he'd be the grandnephew of JFK, is the envoy from Biden's administration to Northern Ireland. I mean, I think that's terribly, terribly important. But again, he's probably found it difficult to tread that with the unionist community and how to bring them on board. But the political vacuum has to be resolved, and resolved fairly soon, because we see, you know, you've been carrying it in your news, the availability of armaments and the finding of pipe bombs and things like that. Where there's a vacuum, there's a danger. And the Biden administration know that, the Irish government know that, the English government know that. And the fact that he hasn't gone to Stormont says a terrible lot. He's not willing to go to an empty building where political process isn't happening. I think that's the message that he will be trying to get across. Look, we have to get this over the line. We have to get back into power sharing. And you know, when he talks about being an Irish American, he doesn't define that as 26 counties. Irish America is 32 counties. Yeah. And he's made that very clear by his fact that he visited Northern Ireland first, that it was at the invitation of Richie Sunak that he arrived first in Ireland, in Belfast. I think that's very significant. And I think it's very humble of the Irish government to stand back and allow that to happen on the island of Ireland,
yeah,
knowing that he would come down south to meet, Michael D. Higgins and speak to the Houses of Deputies and so forth, and here in the 26 counties.
As you said, the opportunity to address Stormont not on the table because of an activity there. However, Joe Biden will tomorrow afternoon address the joint Houses of the Oireachtas, the Dáil and Shannon. How significant is that address going to be?
Well, it's John F. Kennedy did it in 63, and then Ronald Reagan in 1984, and then Bill Clinton with the peace process in 1995. It'll be very interesting to see what he has to say. I have no doubt that he will talk about his own sense of Irishness, but he'll also maybe lay down a view of, look, where do we have to go? It's not good enough to say this is who we are. It's where we want to get to. And one must remember, he's 80 and Michael D. Higgins is 81. These are elder men. And they realise that, look, they've lived a lot of life, and maybe what they'll try to bring, what Joe Biden will try to bring, is a vision of the future, for the future of everybody on this island, a shared Ireland for everybody, and that we must work towards that. So I think it'll be very interesting. I'm not sure what exactly he's going to say, but I do imagine that he will be encouraging both North and South and governments both in Ireland and England to work towards bringing back the storm and bringing back peace and ensuring that there's no political vacuum. I've no doubt about that. But from a tourism point of view, it's going to be amazing. I mean, you couldn't buy in America the advertising on news. You couldn't buy all that. And so from that point of view, our Irish Americanness is very, very important at this moment. And I think he's the seventh president now to have come to Ireland. And probably as Kayleigh was saying, and what I'd said previously too, that he's probably the most Irish American. She would know that better than I, with her genealogy studies and her understanding of that. So look, it's a great day to be Irish. In that sense, it's a great day for Irish America. And please God, it'll be a legacy that he will leave that will build on the peace process that Bill Clinton and others like Bertie Ahern and David Trimble and John Hume and others had tried, and Gerry Adams had tried to secure, and Tony Blair as well. One mustn't forget all the work that has been done to this point and to build on that. You see, we build a bridge in peace, but we must use the bridge.
Yeah.
There's no point in building the bridge and not using it. And that's the thing I hope that he gets us to understand, that we must all use this bridge of peace that has been built for future generations.
Dr. Joe Kelly, a good point to end on. Thank you very much indeed. As always, our historian there, Dr. Joe Kelly, and thanks indeed, of course, to Kayleigh as well from the Irish Genealogy Research Centre. One wonderful to hear about those Donegal links on the Biden side, and we look forward to exploring those more and more as time goes on. Joe and Kelly, thank you very much indeed. Just a few of your comments before we go to a break. Caller says, all motorways should be designed with rail alongside them. We need to look forward. It's just a matter of time before Letterkenny is twice the size of what it is at the moment. Let's take action now instead of waiting until it's too built up to do anything. And that was one of the issues that was raised by some of the councillors yesterday, actually. They were saying at the meeting that the problem with in the town centre is you cannot do anything too much new in the town centre. So you're going to have to be doing your work on the outskirts to try and ease the traffic congestion. Everyone sending in comments saying something needs to be done. Quite what that something is, of course, this is the big question, as always is the case. Caller says, traffic starting toward the shopping centre, roundabout toward the new Dunns. Road markings and roundabouts are confusing as it is. They lead to frustrated and angry drivers. We need better road markings and signage for this route, otherwise there may be serious collisions. With regards to the Irish language, Mary says, when I was at school, everything was taught through Irish, even English. If a teacher asked a question in English, we answered in Irish. We weren't allowed to speak English during playtime, Sinn on scale. Another, Anne says, we need to place much more emphasis on the spoken word. And Donald says, the life of a language depends on its use. 100 years after the British withdrew from this part of the island, we're now more than ever British American in our culture than we were before. With the influx of immigrants and other languages over the past few years, that'll help develop a multicultural, multilingual society, and perhaps may inspire Irish people to have more pride in their own culture and language. And that is a very, very interesting point. As we become more multicultural as a society, will we maybe get a better appreciation of our own culture that we have to an extent left behind. And hopefully that will be the situation. This is Autism Awareness Month. There'll be a lot of discussion on issues pertaining to autism. And what we want to discuss this morning is the use of assistance dogs. And we all know people who have autism that use assistance dogs, and they have been getting great service from those dogs. And those dogs have, in many cases, I think, helped to enrich and improve the lives of people with autism beyond measure. Joined on Zoom this morning by Elaine Cannon, who is the Breeding and Acquisition Coordinator with Autism Assistance Dogs Ireland. Elaine, good morning.
Morning, Donal.
It's a pleasure to have you on the show this morning. And it's something we've seen more and more, the rise in the use of service dogs. And I think most of us will know somebody who has an assistance dog and whose life has been hugely enriched by it.
Yeah, you know, the families that we work with would say that the dog has had a huge impact on their family. I mean, primarily the dogs are used for safety. So the child is attached to the dog via a belt and onto the dog's harness. So a lot of the children that would qualify, I suppose, to have assistance dogs would display bolting behaviour, and they would have no concept of danger. So therefore, they would be having to be strapped into buggies or, you know, their parents holding their hand tightly. And children just don't want that after a particular age. So the assistance dogs gives the children that sense of independence and freedom, but also safety. So it helps lower those anxiety levels, not only for the child, but for the parents as well. So they tend to help the whole family.
And as well as that practical, you know, safety element of what the dog does, the dog also, in many cases, I suspect, gives the child a focus for emotion, that an emotional bond does build up between child and dog, so that the dog is more than, you know, as you say, first and foremost, the dog is there for safety. But the dog also becomes, in every sense, emotional as well as safe support.
Yeah, you know, the dog has no expectations of the child, so the dog doesn't seek out eye contact from the child. You know, the child can fully relax with the dog, and the dog can help them just develop coping mechanisms, I suppose, to deal with that stress as well.
And that, it's interesting the way you phrase that, because maybe that's part of the issue, that when people make contact with someone with autism, perhaps we're looking for the eye contact, perhaps we're looking for a response, perhaps we don't know what response to expect, and perhaps we're on our guard as a result of that. And maybe because we're on our guard, there is a tension comes from us, and that tension comes across, and that tension is felt by the other person, and the conversation and the interaction becomes awkward. As you say, with the dog is just there, the dog is just happy, and it does allow a more natural bond to grow.
It does. And as well, like, the child can get a lot from the dog in sensory terms. So just stroking the dog, patting the dog, feeling like the physical weight of the dog against them can be very calming and soothing. And yeah, just very reassuring for the child as well.
There's a lot of research goes on, and I'm sure, and I know you have links with various colleges and universities as well. So, I mean, I'm sure there is research going on to look at the impact that assistance dogs are having. And there's no doubt in my mind that the research is coming across, you know, with the answer that, yeah, the impact is very positive.
Oh, yeah, like, research studies have been done. I think there's more underway, and they have proven, you know, that the dogs do have a measurable impact both on the child and on the whole family as well. Like, that can't be underestimated, because it can be stressful, you know, living with a child with additional needs. So the dog can help the whole family.
You've been doing a lot of work with students in universities and colleges, making them more aware of autism and the dogs as well. How important is that initiative to get out there to the colleges, to the educational institutions?
Yeah, so I suppose, like, we just don't provide assistance dogs. We're all also into raising awareness of autism and autism inclusion. So we launched the FOILTA campaign a few weeks ago. And one of our great volunteers, Niall from the Rotherstown Park Hotel in Cork, and our fundraising manager, Jacob, have been out and about touring the country, visiting colleges and working just not with hospitality students, but all students. And just because what Niall noticed in his hotel was that quite often guests and staff members wouldn't know how to interact with the family or the child with autism, or they were just lacking some basic awareness. So we're hoping to try and spread that and do things like, you know, promote signage, have autism awareness champions on staff in hotels and things like that. Just get the message out there.
There's also, and we've all become used to seeing the notices, no dogs except for guide dogs. Now, that's obviously being expanded more and more to no dogs except for guide dogs and service dogs. But what's the legal situation with regards to public buildings, be they buildings in public ownership, such as council offices or libraries or theatres or whatever, or be they private businesses such as hotels, bars, restaurants, whatever. But what is the legal situation of a service dog? Do you have a right to bring a service dog into a building?
Yeah, so I suppose our organisation and organisations like Irish Guide Dogs would be accredited, so internationally accredited by Assistance Dogs International. And for that, we have to go through very exhaustive accreditation process every few years. So organisations that train dogs for children with autism and blind people who are accredited by the AGI have full public access rights to, so the kids can go everywhere.
Yeah. So effectively, it is illegal for an accredited dog, an accredited trained dog, it's illegal for that dog to be turned away.
Yeah, I know there have been court cases in the past, particularly with guide dogs, where they've been stopped and, they've gone through the courts and there's been fines given out.
How important is it then? And as you said, you know, the awareness in colleges and so on, and when you're briefing people in colleges, the students in colleges today are presumably the managers and the front of house staff of tomorrow. So from that point of view, you're getting them early. How important is it that there is a national awareness campaign just to gently remind people in front of house positions in buildings across the country to remind them of those legal responsibilities?
Well, it is great because if you're out with your child and your assistance dog and you go somewhere and you're being questioned and maybe you're being asked to leave, that's really a very unpleasant situation to be in, to say the least. And if staff just have that information, then those situations don't occur. All our families as well, they have ID cards to show that their dog is a member of our organisation. Unfortunately, there are people out there who try and bring their pet dogs into those situations. And I think they do more harm than good for the official accredited assistance dogs. But they will always be wearing their jackets. They'll always have their ID cards. So they're pretty easy to spot and recognise.
And as well, the jackets is an interesting one because I've heard discussions before on should an ordinary member of the public interact with a service dog, particularly a service dog who is on duty, to coin a phrase, because you hear very often that if a dog is on duty, you shouldn't pet it, you shouldn't in any way distract it, it's got a job to do, it's doing a professional job, it's doing it well, and we should really be stepping back and letting it do that. What are the protocols with regards to an ordinary member of the public interacting with a service dog?
So definitely I would always say, yeah, never just put your hand out and go to pet the dog, or you'd have some people that would start whistling at the dog when you're walking past to get its attention. So never distract the dog from its work. But, quite often the families will welcome people coming up to chat to them. So always just ask first. Like, having the dog can be an icebreaker for the child, and, seeing that interaction with other people and even other children is great. The families love to see that. But just ask first is the rule of thumb.
Yeah. Elaine, any final words, Autism Awareness Month? I mean, what should we be, if you had one message to say to people, look, this is what we want you to be aware of, what would that message be?
I would say the message to be aware of is just go and gain some understanding. You can do things like check out our website, autismassistancedogsireland.ie. We have loads of information on there. Our waiting list, so if families are out there, there might be families listening who are thinking, I'd love an assistance dog for my child. So our waiting list is opening. We open our waiting list once a year, and we're usually overwhelmed with the number of applications. So from the 24th of April, there'll be a button on our homepage where people can register for the information sessions. They learn all they need to learn there about applying for a dog and to find out if their child meets the criteria. So I'd say, yeah, go check out our website to get more information.
Elaine, thank you very much indeed. Elaine Cannon is the Breeding and Acquisition Coordinator with Autism Assistance Dogs Ireland. It's been a pleasure speaking to you, Elaine, and all the best with the ongoing work. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
That's Elaine there speaking to us from Autism Assistance Dogs Ireland. Now, we're going to change tack completely. It's, as you know, It is the teachers' conference season. Yesterday we spoke to Joanne Irwin from the TUI, and today let's speak to another Donegal delegate who is at a meeting down south, this time in Killarney. Áine McGinley is the Central Executive Committee representative for Donegal and Leitrim with the INTO. Áine, a very good morning to you.
Morning, Donal. Thank you for having me.
It is our pleasure. The vacancy crisis and the recruitment and retention crisis in the secondary sector we discussed yesterday with Joanne, I take it that's also a very real issue for INTO as well.
It is certainly, particularly with regards to trying to keep teachers in the system. The workload issue has come up time and time again, and the INTO actually published a survey on workload earlier this year. And then we also have the difficulty with the substitution crisis and trying to get teachers to cover for approved teacher absences. So that was a motion that was adopted yesterday at our Congress, calling for full substitute cover for all teacher approved absences. And really, in essence, the purpose of that motion is to ensure that when teachers are off and they're not able to attend the workplace, that the children will be taught by a fully qualified teacher.
Yeah. Workload for teachers and class size, it's one of those problems that's always going to be there to a certain extent. Still very much a live issue for discussion and debate.
It absolutely is. The workload issue, as I said just there briefly, the INTO published a report on the workload challenges that face teachers and school leaders. And really, it was alarming, the insights that were highlighted in that report. It found that 9 out of 10 primary teachers are struggling with workload that's literally bursting at the seams. We're trying to keep up with different initiatives that have been foisted upon our schools. And certainly we want to do the very best for our children. But it's the lack of, I suppose, of support for the system whereby everything lands at the door of the principal. But we're trying to ensure that there's post responsibility in our schools so that those issues can be dealt with. And there's a bit of distributed leadership there, because that's a very important issue. And the report also highlighted that principals are working an additional 600 hours a year outside of school time. And there's just so much paperwork with really unrealistic expectations and an overloaded curriculum. And we're welcoming a new curriculum that's coming in into place. But certainly we're trying to get the workload issue experienced by teachers and school leaders reduced, and that school leadership will be given teams to be able to implement that new curriculum.
A lot of the discussion, obviously, over the past number of years about pay, and you know, there was the discussion on the reinstatement of the pay that was lost in the wake of 2009 and the financial crisis then. But very much now the discussion is inflation, the high level of inflation. And at the very least, a teachers' union, and I know indeed John Boyle of the INTO was quoted as saying this earlier this week, that pay rises probably in the region of 10 to 15% would be necessary in realistic terms to actually combat inflation.
This is again, the pay issue that we've brought to Congress this year and was unanimously adopted by our delegates. We have a lack of pay structures that will match inflation. We are trying to bring it now to the Public Services Committee of the Irish Congress of Trade Unions to prioritise a general increase in salaries for teachers to protect their incomes and the cost of rising living costs. The INTO members have called on the executive, of which I'm a member, to establish a task force in October on how to construct a 20-point pay scale for the pre-2011 entrants, because that's a significant issue for them. And then the approach that we take must address the teacher allowances, including the allowances that have not been sanctioned for new beneficiaries since February 2012.
Obviously, a lengthy discussion to be undergone in the coming months. Now, we will have the public pay agreement up for renegotiation toward the end of this year. I mean, would you be anticipating a difficult and potentially lengthy negotiation?
Oh, I have no doubt at all that the negotiations will be difficult and they will be lengthy, Donal. You're absolutely right, because we have a number of asks from our Congress delegates today. And of course, those asks over the last 3 days, and of those asks actually become, when the motions are passed to Congress, it becomes into a policy. So we have to ensure that they are part of the next pay agreement. And I'm sure that those talks will be resuming shortly. Because the Building Momentum Pay Agreement that we're currently covered by will complete by the end of this this year.
I know too, pensions have been an issue at conference, and pension awareness is something that you, as an executive, you and your colleagues have been very anxious to get discussed and get teachers fully appraised of the situation with regards to pensions and planning for the future.
Absolutely. We've noted really the substantial deterioration in pension benefits for teachers who have entered the service since January 2013. The value of public service pensions has substantially reduced as a result of those changes over the last probably 20 years, really. The introduction of a career average pension scheme across the sector means that teachers entering the profession since 2013 can expect a much smaller pension than those who started before then. So what INTO are looking to do now is to have a pension awareness campaign focused on the deficiencies of that single pension scheme, so that teachers can plan for the future, plan for their retirement. But I suppose the earlier they start planning for that, the better prepared they'd be.
Finally, Anya, you will have had quite a lot of members in schools across the country where building projects were delayed. We know Gaelscoil na gCuireadh Máistre in Donegal Town in particular, in this neck of the woods, but schools right across the country were facing uncertain futures. Now, that issue, it seems, was resolved last week, and it now seems to be all systems go. And that sort of blockade by the Department of Public Expenditure has been taken off. It must have been a relief to you that that was taken off before Congress, because I'm sure if it hadn't been, it would have been another issue that would have been, I suspect, a very live one during Congress this year.
It certainly would have. There were 58 building projects in total that were deferred. And as you mentioned there, the Gaelscoil in Donegal Town was one of those. I was with them on their protest last week, the week before last, and I spoke with some of the teachers there. The INTO made representations to the department to encourage the lifting of that ban to go forward, so that those building projects could go forward. We had this this disappointment time and time again. The situation should never have happened. It was a very stressful couple of weeks for the schools involved. And as I say, because of INTO intervention, I suppose that ban has been lifted. But as you said, it certainly would have been an issue that came up in Congress. Everybody deserves to be working in a safe and secure environment, and I'm glad now that those school projects can continue.
Anya, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning. That's Anya McGinley there, the Central Executive Committee representative for Donegal and Leitrim with INTO. And I think your time in Killarney is pretty much coming to an end in the next day or two. So enjoy the rest of it and safe journey home.
Thank you very much, Donal. Take care.
Business Matters, in association with the ATU Donegal Faculty of Business. Are you a senior manager in the private sector looking to reinforce your leadership skills? ATU are offering a Level 9 Executive MBS in Leadership and Innovation based around action learning, starting late April. Take the next step in your career and contact the Exec Ed Coordinator on 91 86206 today, or email donald.hannigan@atu.ie.
Joined in studio by Kieran O'Donnell for this week's Business Matters. Kieran, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, Donald.
Great to speak to you as always. A lot to get through, and some very interesting interviews actually from the podcast, which we will get to in a moment. But looking at some of the business stories that have been making headlines around Donegal and the North West, and we start with the thatch repair scheme.
Yes, Donald, applications are now being taken for the local thatch repair scheme that's being funded by Donegal County Council and the Heritage Council. This year's grant scheme consists of two strands, and funding is ranging from €3,000 to €15,000. Deadline for applications will close on Friday, April 21st at 12 noon, so check out Donegal County Council's social media platforms for more details on
it. And that is an interesting one and an important one, because if you have a thatched roof, I mean, you know, you can't just leave it sit there, because particularly when you have weather like we have out there now at the moment, that really brings it home to us how important it is to get good maintenance on those. So hopefully anyone who does have thatch will be able to avail of that particular grant. An important event coming up in Carndonagh for the local business community there.
Yes, Donald, the first Carndonagh Business and Community Awards Gala is taking place at the Ballyliffin Lodge and Spa on Saturday, May the 6th. There are eight different categories, and voting closes at midnight on Sunday, April 23rd, and MC on the night will be our own Jimmy Stafford.
The Community Monuments Fund is one that we've been hearing a little about, and a number of local groups have benefited.
Yeah, quite a significant amount. Almost €400,000 has been awarded to Donegal community groups under the Community Monuments Fund. Seven projects in the county will share a total of €384,000. The largest allocation of €103,000 has been earmarked for Killatea Church and Graveyard, while €99,000 is going to Ramahi Church and Graveyard.
Donegal ETB always to the forefront in helping with business development in the region, and a new business and administration course that may be of interest to some of our listeners.
Yes, Donald, Donegal ETB's Fuller Education and Training Service has developed a new business and administration course. Participants will learn about information management, event coordination and implementing procedures and systems. So along with a 6-week placement with Optum Ireland and Letterkenny, this City and Gales Level 3 course means those who complete the course will be employment ready in 22 weeks. This programme is commencing on Monday, April 24th and will run through until September the 22nd. So check out Donegal ETB's socials for more on that.
Now, a business in Monaghan has been awarded by the Small Firms Association's National Small Business Awards, but the owner of the business might be known in Donegal for a slightly different reason.
Very much so. That's why I included it. Yeah, Moffat Automated Storage Limited has been named as the overall national winner, as you say. So the Monaghan firm was founded by Sam Moffat in 2017 and now employs 28 people. So Sam Moffat will be well known in this part of the world, winning Donegal International Rally in 2013 and 2019. And his brother Josh is actually the defending champion. Mm-hmm. So along with winning the overall award, Sam Moffat's company also picked up the manufacturing and innovator category prizes at the award ceremony. So well done to him.
Indeed, congratulations to Sam. And I suppose for people who follow the rally, I mean, did you know that Sam Moffat was, you know, a very successful entrepreneur in that way? Let's look at the podcast and some very, very interesting discussions on the podcast this week.
Yes, Donald, on this week's show, I will be talking to Letterkenny-based graphic designer and photographer Stevie Toy and the owner of Ards Coffee Tree in Ards Forest Park, Patrick Stewart. After graduating from Letterkenny IT, Stevie Toy worked as a graphic designer for a number of local newspapers and moved to Brown's Printers in Letterkenny before setting up on his own. He covered his first wedding as a paid photographer in 2017, and back in February, he was named Irish Wedding Photographer of the Year for 2023. In this clip, Stevie speaks about the benefit of social media platforms when it comes to showcasing his work.
Especially in a business that's primarily image-based, it is, and it's something that I need to push more, to be honest with you, because I get wrapped up in my work and I forget I didn't post anything in 3 days, and it's crucial to be doing it, you know. I've any amount of content to put up there, but it's just getting the time to do it and getting it up. But I do have to schedule it in. I really have to push it more, because we have some images there that are beautiful photos, like I should showcase them more than I do.
Is it hard to imagine a business world now without social media?
I would say it's impossible. Everything's social media now. Like, I have a website which I'm getting a new website rebuilt now in the next few weeks. But I would say 8 or 9 of my bookings out of 10 come from Facebook and Instagram.
Now, that will be music to the ears of our bosses here, actually, because there is a huge emphasis on Highland Radio, on social media, and on promotion, and on reminding us that we are effectively a multimedia digital platform now. We're not just a radio station, and we go far beyond radio waves. And I suppose what Stevie there is saying is exactly that. I mean, you know, if you're going to promote yourself, word of mouth is great. The ads in the paper are great. Ads on radio are great. But you've got to do more now. You've got to get right out there on social media.
Yeah, and for him to say 8 or 9 out of his 10 bookings come through social media, as proof positive of exactly what you were saying, Donald. And I suppose it's another reminder of how much the world we live in has changed, and how much change there is, and how we get our information.
Your next guest is Patrick Stewart. Sadly, not the Patrick Stewart we would know from Star Trek Generations so on and so forth. But this is Patrick Stewart from Ards Coffee Tree in Ards Forest
A local
Park.
Man. Patrick Stewart opened Ards Coffee Tree in Ards Forest Park along with his wife Karen in 2017. The lockdowns in 2020 saw a notable rise in the number of visitors to Ards Forest Park, and that increase held firm in 2021 and 2022. Much of Ards Coffee Tree stock is sourced locally, with its full range of tray bakes supplied and plank patisserie in Fulcara. I asked Patrick what business person he admires most.
Well, I suppose you always gravitate to the likes of the Michael O'Leary's and these people. But I suppose locally, I would have to praise a guy called Larkin Verty up in Wild Atlantic Camp. He's a guy that took plenty of risks and didn't lose the chance, you know. So, no, I would say Larkin is a guy locally that employs lots of people, takes lots of chances, and has lots of successful businesses.
And it's great to hear a business person promote somebody else in the locality. And, you know, you could have named anyone. But, yeah, it's good to see that.
Yeah, look, he came up with the idea as well. It was going to be a weekend thing, and then on a seasonal basis. Paddy, as a project manager as well with Optum, this was a sideline that he developed. And it has actually been a very good success story. As you say, he does a very good job at promoting the area, and we did speak about maybe the need maybe to promote the likes of Irish Forest Park a bit more, but it's very much in the centre of so many things that are in that area, and as he said himself, it is a bit of a jewel in the crown and Donegal tourism.
Absolutely, yeah, and when you open a coffee venue like that, I mean, you know, on the one hand, it seems to be a really easy and simple thing to do, but people have become so, you know, discriminating now about their coffee, and people have developed taste, and people know what good coffee tastes like. And if you're not providing good coffee, you're not going to stay in business for very long.
Yeah, very much. Well, I'm sure the footfall around his business will be a very good vote of confidence.
Mm, absolutely.
The one thing he did say is, it's weather dependent at times, and we were joking the fact that the most used app on his phone is the weather app. So yeah. Very much dependent, or largely dependent on weather, but they've managed to keep it going over weekends, and obviously with the start of the tourist season in earnest this weekend, that's where they said to go down and talk to Patrick.
Well, given the numbers that were around that area over the past couple of days, hopefully they've been utterly run off their feet this past weekend. Good to see and good to hear there from Patrick. The full interviews, of course, as ever, on the podcast. Kieran, how can people hear it?
Yeah, they are available to download now at highlandradio.com, Donal, or wherever they get their podcasts.
And the show will be broadcast at the weekend.
On Sunday evening, usual time after the 6 o'clock news.
Kieran O'Donnell, presenter of Business Matters. Just to repeat, the two interviewees there that will appear on the podcast, Stevie Toy, the photographer and graphic designer, and Patrick Stewart, the owner of Ard's Coffee Tree in Ard's Forest Park, both available on the podcast. It's on the website, highlandradio.com, and it will also be broadcast on air after the 6 o'clock news on Sunday. Kieran, thank you very much indeed.
Good morning, all. Thank you.
Just a few comments before we go to our next caller with regards to traffic. Local Letterkenny bus driver, it took me an hour and 5 minutes to get from Golf Course Road to Arena 7 at one point. The traffic queue into town yesterday afternoon at around about 3:30, and remember there were no schools, was all the way out to Duns of Illustrin. Thankfully we know what side roads to escape on and get in quicker, but felt sorry for the double row of car owners in that dreadful queue. Well, as I said, I was driving from the Highland Radio base here in Mountaintop down into Glencar in Letterkenny, and I must actually admit I did. And funny, it's another road that we've been discussing over the past couple of days. I just took a right and went up the Windy Hall Road and got down to Glencar that way, and it was a lot quicker. Caller says, I remember a few years ago a builder wanted to build accommodation opposite the new university in Letterkenny, and that was turned down. That development would have provided accommodation for a lot of students, so says a caller. With regards to how we revive the Irish language, some comments from Gwelsko. On the Irish language, Colm says, use your cupola focal, normalise it. If people hear it, they'll speak it. And Anya says, make every play school a Nínara. Now, a couple of our comments there, more to come a little bit later. But now let's go to a story we referenced on our newspaper review, and it's from a discussion at the Donegal Municipal District meeting, which took place this week. We're joined this morning on the line by Councillor Niamh Kennedy. Niamh, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, Donal. Good morning, everyone.
Niamh, there's an issue in Killybegs. There is a road which can help alleviate traffic in Killybegs, but because it's called the Industrial Road, people are assuming it's leading into an industrial estate and they're not using mm-hmm. it.
Exactly. It is an issue that's gone on for quite a while, and it's something that everybody had noted, that why isn't people using this road and what's wrong? It's a perfectly good road. It completely takes you out of the town. It takes you straight into Fintra and leads you on to Kiltar, Carrick, then Columkill. And indeed, locals living in Kilcar, Carrick and Glenconkill don't tend to use the road either because they seem to feel that it's slightly longer than the old road, the old Fintra Road. But it's really not. It's just, I think it's just a force of habit for locals that just use the old road. But the old road is no longer kind of fit for purpose because it's just, there's no footpath on it. There's a lot more houses over the time and a lot more people walking, out walking and cycling, etc. So the industrial road actually takes, it was, as I say, it's opened about 15 years now and it has a number of factories on it and it's a great road and it literally takes you out to the Glenlee roundabout. But why, I mean, camper vans, everything is coming up at Cunningham's Junction, up the street, up the old road, taking you to kind of five roads off it on the junction, which leaves an awful mess. The fish shop is there, and I mean, I'd say Ronan in the fish shop could tell you some stories of what goes on there as to see the traffic flow and how things happen. And if cars are parked, it just causes a great backlog right up as far as the old carpet factory. So it creates quite a mayhem. And obviously with the Easter holidays and people coming to stay, we found that a lot of people were still using the old road.
Yeah.
Is the industrial road not right?
Is it as straightforward as changing the name? If you were to change that name to, say, the Fintra Kilcar Link, would that help?
Mm. I think it would. For a start off, it's not even on the Google Maps. It's not on, you know, it's not on sat navs. So people are not using it because I genuinely think, because it says industrial road, people think that it's an industrial estate and they're not going up that way. There's no point. That's just an industrial estate. It's a dead end. But it's actually not. It takes you out to the Glenlee roundabout and takes you clear and up a perfectly good road, which is, it needs to be used. And as I say, we've got a load of people coming now in camper vans, coming through for the holidays again, and they're wanting to get into the campsites at Fintra and Kilcar and in Carrick at the Sleeve League camping. And they're still coming up the old Fintra Road and causing congestion and meeting traffic coming down. And then we've got fish lorries coming up the hill and it's just mayhem. So we're just asking, I suppose, to get this. We've looked for to get the road name changed now for the last probably 6 months. So I brought it up yesterday at our council meeting to see, can we bring it forward to plenary to put the correct name on the road. It really never was named. I mean, Industrial yeah. Road was just because it was an industrial estate up there. So we now need to name the road and get it on Google Maps and get it on the right way so people will not be stressed out by traffic and have people complaining about, you know.
Are you suggesting any particular names at the moment, or is that up for discussion?
Well, yeah, we did. We put it out there to the public back probably about 6 months ago. And yes, a simply lovely name is the Glenlee Pass because it's passing mm-hmm. the Glenlee Forest and it's at the Glenlee Roundabout. So it ticks all the boxes.
Yeah.
We don't want to call it after anybody's names or anything like that because you don't want to upset people or put people out. So safer and better that it's something that's in the locality and it's always a name that has been there from the Glenlee Forest. So that's the name we would love to use. So the Glenlee Pass.
So hopefully then that'll come up before the next plenary meeting of council and we'll get the backing of council. I mean, is it just as straightforward as getting it up for adoption now at a full council meeting, or does it have to go through more bureaucracy first?
There was a lot of bureaucracy at the beginning. In fact, at first we thought we could put it through our own municipal district meetings, and then we were told by corporate no that we couldn't, or we had to go through to plenary. So it was agreed at our municipal district. Then letters had to be sent out then to the people who live on the road or businesses on the road to let them know that this is what the intent was and if they had any issues or anything like that. So, well, nobody has any issues nowadays anyway because everybody's got a postcode. So, you know, there should be no issues with that. So everything looks like it's in place. So our roads engineers are now working on that to bring it in through corporate to get it through for the next plenary meeting. So hopefully we will have less confusion going forward for the summer, Donal.
Excellent. We look forward to seeing that happen. In the meantime, Councillor Niamh Kennedy, thanks indeed for speaking to us this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you indeed. That's Councillor Niamh Kennedy there. We have a few minutes left before we go, so let's clear up a few of your comments. A few left over actually from yesterday. We discussed the driving test. Caller says, once you do a test, you're qualified, yet you have to have someone on board with you. It's a very unfair system, especially for people in rural areas. Now, I don't think, no, you don't have to have somebody else on board with you. I think this may be a slight mistake a caller is making. We have, when we pass your test, you get rid of the L plates, you put up the N plate for 2 years, but you can drive on your own with the N plate. Once you've passed the test, you do drive on your own. You do have to put up the N plate to show that you've recently passed your test. My own daughter indeed passed her test just over a year ago. Still has N plates on her car, but no, she drives to work herself every day. So no, you don't have to have somebody in the car with you if you have an N plate. I failed my first theory test. Hope to do my second theory driving test in September. How does it work for people with disabilities? My understanding is that with regards to the theory test is exactly the same. And then when you do your test, if you have to drive an adapted car to suit your disability, you will do your test in the adapted car and the tester will assess whether you are competent to drive. I have a potential issue myself, and I made inquiries about it, and I was told no, that issue does not come into play with regards to the test. It's to do with sight. I am monocular. I do not have vision in my left eye. And basically, I made inquiries, and I was told no, it isn't as though you are monocular or binocular or whatever. The big question is, are you competent to drive? And if you're competent to drive, then you can drive. So it's fairly straightforward. It isn't as though if you have an adapted car because of a disability, you'll be tested in that car, and then you will be given hopefully your certificate of competency to drive. And that's it from the 9 till noon show for this Wednesday. As ever, John Breslin is up next around the Northwest. Before that, of course, we'll have the news headlines at midday with Donna Marie Doherty. Thanks, as always, to all our contributors. Thanks especially to you for listening. Thanks to Niamh and to Caroline for taking your calls. Caroline, indeed, for producing as well. From myself, Donal Kavanagh, have a very good day.